Nelson Mandela once said, "The struggle is my life." And he ought to know. Following years of fighting against racial segregation and violence in South Africa, he was arrested in 1962 and sentenced to life in prison. On February 11, 1990, Mandela was released from prison after nearly three decades of incarceration. 4 years later, he was elected president of South Africa, and he served there till June of 99. I mean, it's an unbelievable story if you think about it. He went from prison to the presidency in 4 years. Talk about a turnaround. Well, if you think that's something, wait till you hear Joseph's story. If anybody understood harsh struggles and unjust treatment, it was Joseph in the Old Testament. He went from prison to the palace in Egypt literally overnight. Now, it took a lot to get him there, but the transition, once it finally came, was so fast it made his head spin. Like Nelson Mandela, maybe like you and like me, Joseph's life took some major twists and turns along the way. In fact, his life was messy in many ways through little fault of his own. But the mess became his message. His life became his legacy. He faced nearly overwhelming obstacles, and yet God elevated him to second in command over all of Egypt. His success came largely because of faith and perseverance and godly character, but he shows us how to live when life's a mess. Let me give you a bottom line right off the bat this morning, and then we'll dive into our text. When everything's going wrong, you can still do what's right. I mean, bottom line, when everything's going wrong, you can still do what's right. That statement pretty well sums up Joseph's life. His integrity was firmly in place no matter what challenges came his way. Now, just for the record, the Joseph we're talking about here is not the Joseph who became the husband of Mary, the mother of Jesus. That happened about 1,900 years after this story. Now, this Joseph was the son of Jacob of Israel. We talked about him last Sunday. This Joseph was the grandson of Isaac, the great-grandson of Abraham, who was the father of the Jewish nation. Well, like any great story, Joseph's life unfolds in a series of chapters. And I want to walk you through those one at a time. Each chapter reveals abuse, injustice, and yet each one also reveals an opportunity that Joseph had to do the right thing. Now, we could spend weeks studying Joseph's life, but this is more of a Reader's Digest condensed version. I want you to see that messiness is no excuse for sinfulness. Messiness is no excuse for sinfulness. So chapter one of Joseph's life, he went from charmed childhood to family abuse. And the key word in this chapter is naive. I was going to say that Joseph was innocent, but I think there's more to it than that. See, Joseph was one of 12 brothers born to Jacob's two wives and two concubines. And yet, he wasn't just one of 12. For better or for worse, Joseph was his father's favorite. Genesis 37:3 says, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. A coat of many colors," the King James Version says. "An amazing technicolor dream coat," according to the Broadway musical. Whatever you call it, this coat became a symbol not only of his father's love, but also of his brother's jealousy. None of them got a technicolor dream coat. Why? Because Joseph was the favorite. He was daddy's pet. And apparently, Jacob didn't care that everybody else knew it. Not exactly a prescription for peace in the family. Genesis 37:4 says, "Joseph's brothers hated him because their father loved him more than the rest of them. They couldn't say a kind word to him." Now, frankly, Joseph didn't really help the situation. This is the naive part. One day, he tattled on them to his dad when he thought they weren't performing at the optimal level. Another time, when he had these dreams that suggested that one day he would rule over the entire family, rather than keeping those dreams to himself, or maybe just talking them about them privately with his father, now he announces to everybody who would listen that one day he was going to be in charge of the whole family. And as you can imagine, that did not exactly endear him to his brothers. All this discord set into motion a series of traumatic events that changed Joseph's life forever. Now, I'm certainly not saying that he was responsible for what happened, but I do think that both he and his dad were naive to what was going on. See, after he told his brothers about his dreams, verse 8 says, "They hated him all the more." Now, I don't know how it works at your house, but when our kids were little, there was nothing that Gail and I enjoyed more than to hear them laughing together. Now, truthfully, sometimes we worried about what they were laughing about, but there's something about listening to them getting along with each other and having fun together. Man, it's just music to our ears, and still we enjoy that today when they get together. But at the same time, when they were little and they weren't getting along and there was fussing and fighting and just bickering back and forth, man, it's hard to focus on anything else. It's so frustrating. Well, Jacob's sons, they weren't just having trouble getting along. I mean, the brothers despised Joseph. They hated him, so much so that one day when Jacob naively sent Joseph to visit his brothers who were out in the wilderness tending the flocks, Genesis 37:18 says, when Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. Probably saw that coat of many colors. And as he approached, they made plans to kill him. Here comes that dreamer, they said. Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams. Man, this wasn't some petty jealousy or sibling rivalry. These guys wanted Joseph dead. Now, fortunately, calmer heads prevailed. Nobody really had the courage to step up and stop this, to do the right thing. But in chapter 37, verse 26, Judah says to his brothers, what will we gain by killing our brother? His blood would just give us a guilty conscience. Oh, poor them. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood, and his brothers agreed. Wow, what a guy. You know, Joseph is our own flesh and blood after all. Let's not kill him. Let's just sell him into lifelong slavery, lie to our dad, and forget all about him. And so at the close of Joseph chapter 1, this 17-year-old God-fearing Israelite, this son of privilege, he's taken off to Egypt where he's bought as a slave by a man named Potiphar. And that brings us to Joseph chapter 2. See, chapter 2 is from house slave to house superintendent. And the key word here is faithful. Genesis 39 verse 2 says, the Lord was with Joseph, and so he succeeded in everything he did as he served in the home of his Egyptian master. Potiphar noticed this and realized that the Lord was with Joseph, giving him success in everything he did. And this pleased Potiphar, so he soon made Joseph his personal attendant. He put him in charge of his entire household and everything that he owned. From that day, Joseph was put in charge of his master's household and property. The Lord began to bless Potiphar's house for Joseph's sake. All of his affairs ran smoothly. His crops and his livestock flourished. Now, all things considered, this could have turned out a lot worse for Joseph than it did. Rather than rebelling or trying to escape, he earned Potiphar's trust. When his owners bossed him around, he didn't say, I know speaky Egyptian. No. He just served well. He rose to prominence in the house. He did the best that he could right where he was. See, Potiphar eventually put Joseph in charge of the entire estate. And things are starting to look up, despite the fact that he's in slavery far from home. Now, we don't know how long. He was 17 when our story began. He'll be 30 before things turn around. Talk about a long sermon. But Joseph obviously worked for Potiphar for several years. Things are going about as well as could be expected. But at some point, the bottom dropped out of their arrangement. See, not only was Joseph wise and godly, according to Scripture, he was also well-built and handsome. So much so that he caught the eye of Mrs. Potiphar. I mean, why couldn't it have been a pretty teenage daughter? Maybe courtship, marriage, he becomes a son-in-law instead of a slave. But no, he has to be the owner's wife who's after him. And she's not exactly subtle about her infatuation. Day after day, the only words that we have recorded in Scripture from her are, come and sleep with me. The epitome of discretion. But listen to Joseph's response in Genesis 39. Verse 8, Joseph refused her. Look, he told her, my master trusts me with everything in his entire household. No one here has more authority than I do. He has held back nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing? It would be a great sin against God. Now, to be honest, we really don't know how much of a temptation this was for Joseph. Was Mrs. Potiphar shapely and attractive? Was she not so shapely, not so attractive? We don't know. We do know that she was a woman of influence. She was rich and powerful. She could have seen that things went very well with Joseph. We know that he could have easily rationalized, you know, I'm miles from home. I don't really have any friends. I'm single. She's my boss. Nobody will ever know. But whatever the level of temptation she inspired, day after day after day, she relentlessly is telling Joseph how handsome he is, how wonderful he is, how desirable he is. And man, that's like cool water on parched ground to a bond slave who's far from home. Joseph's lonely, she's available. And yet he continues to refuse her advances. And you know why? Because when everything's going wrong, you can still do what's right. And that's the conviction that Joseph had. I heard a story one time about a dad who told his son not to swim in the river. The current was dangerous. He just didn't want him to do it. And the boy came home one day. His hair was all wet. His dad asked him how his hair got wet. He said, well, I fell in the river. Well, his dad's a pretty sharp guy. He says, if you fell in the river, how come your clothes are dry? And the boy said, well, I had a hunch I was going to fall in, so I took them off. You know, it's so easy to rationalize our behavior, isn't it? It's so easy to maybe feel sorry for yourself when things aren't going your way, so you decide, you know, I deserve this indiscretion. This just seems so appealing, you just decide to talk your way into it and figure you'll talk your way out of trouble later. But Joseph just kept on honoring the Lord. He kept on doing the right thing despite the temptations. But then came that fateful day when nobody else was around. Mrs. Potiphar threw herself at Joseph, grabbing him by the robe. Sleep with me, she said. And he ran out of the house, leaving his robe behind. Good for Joseph. Except you've heard the old saying, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. That's what Joseph's about to find out. See, Mrs. Potiphar was so ticked off for being shunned that she called in the other servants and she accused Joseph of sexual misconduct. She showed them his robe as proof of the attack. And I wonder how many of them kind of rolled their eyes as she told her story. And they knew what kind of woman she was. They knew her reputation. But nevertheless, Joseph winds up in prison for attempted rape. I mean, he's thinking he deserves a medal for refusing her advances. And now this. J. Wallace Hamilton once said, every man's life is a diary in which he intends to write one story and he's forced to write another. And this was not the story that Joseph would have written for himself. And it was not the story that he would have even believed possible based on his noble birth and exalted position in the family. But sometimes bad things happen to good people. Sometimes honorable people get what they don't deserve. Sometimes when you do the right thing, the consequences are all wrong. Sometimes life is messy. What makes Joseph stand out is how he responded to all the pain and trouble in his life. Remember, when everything's going wrong, you can still do what's right. See, Joseph got to prison, but as usual, he made the best of it. And that's Joseph chapter 3. Chapter 3 is from prisoner of the state to prison trustee. And the key word here is consistent. Genesis 39:22 says, before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. The warden had no more worries because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him and caused everything that he did to succeed. Now, a trustee is a prisoner who's given responsibility because of earned trust. It's different than a trustee with a double E at the end who legally administrates property. Joseph became a trustee. See, once again, he worked hard and he rose to a level of prominence in the system. Why? Because he didn't let his circumstances undermine his integrity. Yet maybe his fate's about to change. See, one day, Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker are thrown into prison with Joseph. What they had done, we can only guess. The baker obviously prepared the food. The cupbearer, or the wine taster, you might think of him that way, he would sample the food to make sure that it wasn't poisoned. So what happened? I don't know, maybe there was a fly in the soup, there was a worm in the apple, there was a beetle in the schnitzel. Maybe there was a gnat in the grits, could have been a southern baker. But whatever it was, the baker and the wine taster fell out of favor somehow with Pharaoh, and so he got ticked off, and they both landed in prison. Sometime later, on the same night, each of them had a dream, and it was an amazingly vivid dream. Both of them were confused by this dream, and the next morning, when Joseph asked what was bothering them, each shared this bizarre story. Now listen, I don't think every dream has an interpretation. Okay, some dreams are just weird. I'm telling you, if every dream that I ever had was a message from heaven, well, God would be pretty messed up. Thankfully, that's not the case. But sometimes God does communicate through dreams. And in the case of Joseph, God also empowered Joseph to interpret those dreams. And so the interpretation of the cupbearer's dream was good news. The strange images that he saw actually foretold that in 3 days' time, he would be released from prison and he would be restored to his important position. Now, hearing such a positive interpretation, the baker told his dream to Joseph. Unfortunately, his dream wasn't so pleasant. In the same three-day time, Pharaoh, Joseph said, would decide to cut off the baker's head, hang his body on a tree so that the birds could come and eat his flesh. I'm guessing the baker wanted a second opinion, but it just didn't do any good. After 3 days, the cupbearer was reinstated, the baker was decapitated, and Joseph was still behind bars. Now, fortunately, the cupbearer promised to put in a good word for Joseph once he was released, only he forgot. Genesis 40:23 says, Pharaoh's chief cupbearer forgot all about Joseph, never giving him another thought. I mean, can you imagine? Joseph is thinking, finally, this is my break. Finally, this guy's going to put in a good word for me. Things are about to change. And the Bible says he languished in prison for 2 more years because he was forgotten. But he kept doing the right thing. You remember when Cal Ripken of the Baltimore Orioles broke Lou Gehrig's record for playing in 2,130 consecutive baseball games? I remember Terry Miners on WHS radio said, boy, you play in 2,131 consecutive games and you get to be a hero. You watch 2,131 consecutive games, all you get is divorced. Man, that's a little free advice for you there. Listen, we honor the faithfulness of a guy like Cal Ripken. No matter how he's feeling, no matter how his body aches, no matter what the pains are, you know, he suited up and he got on the field every day. Every day he did his job. And that was Joseph. Through all this unjust treatment, he maintained his integrity. I can't imagine the frustration. He had every reason to be sullen, to be angry, to be defeated. But he stayed true. And that's why Joseph chapter 4 is such a turnaround chapter in the story. See, while Joseph was languishing away in prison, God was working behind the scenes. I'm telling you, God was at work, even though Joseph couldn't see it happening. See, one night Pharaoh had a dream, and it was so disturbing, he wanted somebody to tell him what it meant. But none of his advisors could do it. He explained it to them. They had no idea. And suddenly, the cupbearer remembered that Joseph, this guy he met in prison, had interpreted his dream correctly. And so he told Pharaoh all about it. Joseph is brought out of prison, he's cleaned up, and he's brought to Pharaoh. And in Genesis 41:15, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream last night, and no one here can tell me what it means. But I have heard that when you hear about a dream, you can interpret it. And Joseph said, no, it is beyond my power to do this. But God can tell you what it means, and he can set you at ease. See, in Joseph chapter 4, we see him suddenly going from consultant to vice president. Pharaoh wants some advice, and then he elevates him over the whole land. But the key word here, the key word is humble in this chapter of Joseph's life. He said, look, I can't do it. I don't have the ability to tell you what this dream means, but God can do it. He recognized the source of his own wisdom. See, the dream is incredible enough that Pharaoh brings this convicted felon into the royal palace for advice, and that's crazy. But what's even more crazy is that when Joseph interprets the dream, Pharaoh believes every word that he says, and he really responds in the best possible way. See, here's the dream. Pharaoh saw 7 fat cows that were eaten by 7 scrawny cows. Then he saw 7 plump heads of grain swallowed up by 7 withered, blighted heads of grain. And God gave Joseph the ability to interpret the dream. 7 years of abundance were coming for Egypt, represented by the 7 fat cows, the 7 plump heads of grain. Those 7 years would be followed then by 7 years of famine, thus the swallowing up of that which was healthy. And Joseph said Egypt needed to stockpile grain during the good years so they could survive the bad years. In fact, he said that they ought to appoint a wise and intelligent man to oversee the whole process. And Genesis 41:37 says, Joseph's suggestions were well received by Pharaoh and his officials. So Pharaoh asked his officials, can we find anyone else like this man so obviously filled with the Spirit of God? And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has revealed the meaning of the dreams to you, clearly no one else is as intelligent or wise as you are. You will be in charge of my court, and all my people will take orders from you. Only I, sitting on the throne, will have a rank higher than yours. See, God elevated Joseph to second in command over the most powerful kingdom in the world at that time. Now, when we face overwhelming obstacles, we need to trust God and keep doing what's right. Trust God and just keep doing the right thing. We cannot let our character, our honesty, our morality fluctuate by how things are going or aren't going in our lives. Integrity has nothing to do with circumstances. God bless Joseph because Joseph understood that. Listen, when everything's going wrong, you can still do what's right. And that means when work is a hassle and the kids are driving you crazy, man, you just keep doing what's right. When your wife's frustrated or your ex-wife is angry or your husband doesn't understand you, you just keep doing what's right. When your boss doesn't like you or your employees won't listen to you or your coworkers ridicule you, keep doing what's right. Now, there's no guarantee that God's going to put you in a palace and elevate you to second in command over the whole business or the whole company, the whole nation, the whole school. But he does promise to be with you, to bless you, to someday reward you beyond measure. Listen, integrity has nothing to do with circumstances. If we'll do what's right, no matter how inconvenient, no matter how challenging it might be, God will ultimately reward us in a big way. And all of this now sets up Joseph chapter 5. Okay, and that's important because Joseph's 11 brothers come back on the scene in this chapter, so to speak, of his life. This is where he goes from victim to guardian. And the key word here is compassionate. Now, I don't have time to tell you all this story in great detail. It's why you should go home and read Genesis 37 to 50, or at least chapters 42 to 47, because the way this all unfolds is just priceless. See, the famine didn't just hit Egypt. It also hit the land of Canaan, where Jacob and his 11 sons lived. So one day, Dad sent 10 of his sons to Egypt to buy more grain. He didn't send his youngest son, Benjamin, because Benjamin was the new favorite now that Joseph was gone. Since he had lost Joseph, he wasn't about to lose another favorite. While the brothers were in Egypt, Joseph recognized them, but they didn't recognize him. Apparently, he spoke in Egyptian. It's likely that he also walked like an Egyptian. Remember that song? They definitely weren't expecting to see him, and so they didn't realize that it was him. Now, he accused them of being spies, said they had come from Canaan to find out how vulnerable Egypt was to attack. They insisted they weren't spies. He insisted they were. Finally, he said that they would only be allowed to leave if they brought their younger brother back with them. And through a long series of events, they go home and they get their brother. Now, when they brought him back, Joseph invited the 11 of them to dinner at his house. Again, they did not recognize him. And I love this detail. He seated them at the table in order of their ages. And then he had the servants give Benjamin five times as much as everybody else got. You just see this plate piled high with food, five times as much food on his plate. So Joseph asked him questions about their father back in Canaan. Finally, he sent them on their way. However, when he loaded up each of the brothers with a large bag of grain, he had one of his own silver cups hidden inside Benjamin's bag. He had one of his servants kind of slip that in. Then the brothers set out toward home. They hadn't gone far when a servant comes riding up demanding to know why they had stolen from his master. And the 11 brothers insist they'd never do such a thing. But one by one, the bags are opened and the silver cup was found in Benjamin's bag. Oh man, the brothers are horrified. They don't know what to do. They all return to Egypt. Now they're told that only the thief has to come back. Everybody else is free to go home. Man, nobody's going to go home and tell Jacob that his other favorite son is missing too now. So they all headed back to Egypt together. Now Joseph is about to reveal himself to his brothers, but there's one detail I just don't want you to miss that's really, really important here. Joseph is still speaking Egyptian through an interpreter. And he demands to know why they would repay his kindness with such treachery. And Judah, his older brother, says, "Oh my Lord, what can we say to you? How can we convince you of our innocence? God must be punishing us for our sins. We will all become your slaves, but please let the boy Benjamin return home to his father." And Joseph says, "Oh no, I would never do that. Only the guilty brother must stay and be my slave." And Judah says, "Please, Lord, do not be angry with me, but please, just let me have this one word with you. If Benjamin does not return home, our father will die of grief. His life is bound up in the life of the boy. Please, sir," Judah says, "keep me as your slave in his place." Now, friends, listen, this is incredibly important. Judah was the one years before who suggested they sell Joseph into slavery and lie to their father about what happened to him. Judah didn't care then about the grief this would cause their dad. Joseph was aware that Judah had been pretty heartless back then, but now Judah suddenly is stepping up. He's offering his own life in exchange for Benjamin so Benjamin can go home and be with his father. Joseph is just so overwhelmed by this, he can't control his emotions anymore. And Genesis 45 verse 2 says, he broke down and he wept. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians could hear him, and word of it quickly carried to Pharaoh's palace. I am Joseph, he said to his brothers. Is my father still alive? But his brothers are speechless. They're stunned to realize that Joseph was standing there in front of them. Please come closer, he said to them. And so they came closer, and he said again, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery in Egypt. But don't be upset, and don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. This famine that has ravaged the land for 2 years will last 5 more years. There will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God has sent me ahead of you to keep you and your families alive and to preserve many survivors. Man, notice how much he said in those few verses. He affirmed his love for them. He assured them they were forgiven. He acknowledged God's involvement in his life. And then verse 14 says, weeping with joy, he embraced Benjamin, and Benjamin did the same. Then Joseph kissed each of his brothers, and he wept over them. And after that, they began talking freely with him. Now, he's going to send them back on their way home to Canaan. But I think it's funny. He says to them as they're going away, he says, don't quarrel on the way. I guess he knew that, man, this is all so overwhelming. Somebody's bound to get touchy. But they got home, and they told their dad, guess what? Joseph's still alive. And oh, yeah, by the way, he is the vice president over all the land of Egypt. This is as unlikely a turn of events as Jacob ever could have dreamed. And in many ways, really, they all lived happily ever after. I mean, they came back to Egypt, and they were so blessed by what happened with Joseph being in charge of Egypt. Now, years later, when Jacob passed away, the brothers got nervous that maybe Joseph was finally going to seek his revenge. And so they came to him, and they begged for mercy. And Joseph is kind of heartbroken that they would think this way. He said in chapter 50, verse 19, don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I could punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so that I could save the lives of many people. No, don't be afraid. I will continue to take care of you and your children. And he reassured them by speaking kindly to them. Friends, do you know why this story turned out the way it did? Because Joseph maintained his integrity. No matter what he was doing, he stayed on the up and up. No matter what was going down, right? He stayed on the up and up. He understood that integrity has nothing to do with circumstances. He just kept doing the right thing. He just kept making wherever he was better by being the person that God had called him to be. Keith Green said years ago, if you can be bought at any price, it doesn't matter the price. It only matters that you can be bought. See, the minute we start deciding whether to do the right thing or not based on what's going on around us, well, that's when we're in big trouble. Because when everything's going wrong, you can still do what's right. I mean, think about it. Have you ever been in such a mess that lying seemed like the only way out? Have you ever been having so much trouble during an exam that cheating seemed like your only hope? Have you ever been so lonely or so depressed that taking drugs or getting drunk or having sex seemed like the only consolation? Have you ever been so financially strapped that stealing or maybe embezzling money from your company or cheating on your taxes seemed like the only solution? Now, how about this one? And be honest. Have you ever been so abused or mistreated, kind of like Joseph in our story, so mistreated that you felt like you deserved to sin because you'd suffered so much heartache? I mean, abuse is a horrible thing, but it's not an excuse. Our integrity has nothing to do with our circumstances. If we can be bought at any price, it doesn't matter the price. It only matters that we can be bought. Joseph is a great reminder that when we're facing overwhelming obstacles, when we're victims of abuse or attack, we need to trust God and just keep doing the right thing. Joseph was faithful. He was consistent. He was humble. He was compassionate. And that's the goal of our lives as well. When everything's going wrong, you can still do what's right. You can still be right. We can always do that. When life's a mess, that's the message that we need to send.